DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Y'all know that I'm a little bit of a geek, I guess, from time to time. That's especially true when it comes to the history of Georgia football, so I'm really excited about today's show. Later on, we're going to talk to John Lastinger, the great former Georgia quarterback who led the Dogs to that thrilling 10-9 victory over Texas in the 84 Cotton Bowl. I've got that game on my mind a lot this week, just given the fact that it is official that Georgia will play Texas coming up in the Sugar Bowl. So John's going to help us remember that one and look ahead at what's going to happen on January 1st in the Sugar Bowl. We'll do that later on. A lot of recruiting news in our program today, and I think that you're going to find that kind of interesting. We'll do that also throughout our program. We'll deal with the Mel Tucker stuff. But before that, speaking of Mel Tucker, I actually want to begin with him on a different reason before we get into his eventual replacement at Georgia now that it's official for a Tucker at Colorado. There was a quote that now former Georgia defensive coordinator Mel Tucker gave at the beginning of the season that I always thought was just really, really great. You know how it works with the Georgia coordinators. They speak to the media essentially twice a year, at the very beginning of the season before everything kicks off, and then in the bowl game at the end of the season. Now, Tucker won't do that because he's not going to be in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl. More on that in a moment. But when he did speak before the very beginning of the season, obviously he was talking about the personnel that he was going to have at his disposal here in 2018. One of the names that comes up prominent in that is DeAndre Baker, who was expected to have a great season, and then Baker goes out and meets those expectations, if not exceeding them in the way that he performed for Georgia this season. But Tucker's evaluation of Baker before the beginning of the year, I always thought was kind of neat. You know, in terms of Baker, who can be at times a little soft-spoken guy, and I probably wasn't quite as soft-spoken when Deebo Samuel got him riled up at the beginning of the year, but the overall demeanor for Baker is probably a little soft-spoken. Certainly not seeking the limelight away from the field. He's, I think, comfortable being in the spotlight while he's on the field. But away from the field, he's not the loudest, typical defensive back, diva-type player. That's not really what Baker is. He is, I think, a really good leader because of the example that he sets for the Georgia program. In fact, the reason why I think that in part is because that's how Mel Tucker has described him. Let's go back to August and hear Mel Tucker, the Georgia defensive coordinator at that time, talking about his star cornerback DeAndre Baker.
He's more of a lead by example type, but those type of guys that don't say a lot, when they do speak, everyone listens, and he's that type of guy. And sometimes, he has a really good feel for his teammates. If he needs to get on a guy in front of other guys, he'll do that. He may need to pull a guy to the side and get him one-on-one. He'll do that, and that's a sign of a good leader.
Don't you love that? I mean, first of all, in any walk of life, I think that's probably true, especially for, guys like me who are probably tempted to use 50 words when two might be sufficient. I think there's something to be said for, hey, he doesn't speak much, but when he does speak, everybody listens. When he does speak, everybody pays very close attention to what he's having to say. And if he has to pull a guy to the side, he'll do that. But it's more one of those things of, here's a guy like Baker who quietly goes about his business until there's a true message that has to be delivered. And then when it needs to be delivered, he delivers it emphatically. Well, I couldn't help but think about what Mel Tucker had said about Baker back in the summer based on DeAndre Baker's latest announcement. It comes last night in Atlanta as a part of the College Football Awards deal that takes place this time of year. Every single year there at the College Football Hall of Fame, Chip Towers reports what DeAndre Baker had to say, letting Dog fans know that he indeed plans to play in the Sugar Bowl. Here's the tweet from Chip Towers. Georgia cornerback DeAndre Baker says he does plan to play in the Sugar Bowl. He's, of course, doing that from the College Football Awards in Atlanta. Obviously, we know guys like Deebo Samuel have chosen not to play in his team's bowl game from South Carolina. So DeAndre Baker saying he will play in the Sugar Bowl counts as news in this new modern era that we live in. And I also think this, speaks to DeAndre Baker's character. Now, I wouldn't be mad at him if he chose not to play. If he said, hey, injuries, important to me, that's a big risk for me. I wouldn't be, all that upset with him if he said, I do want to go focus on getting ready for the NFL. That'd be his choice. I think a lot of guys have made that choice, and that to me is not the kind of thing I'm going to be angry about, especially when you think about what Baker has a chance to be at the next level. Once again, Mel Tucker describing that from the very beginning of his career at Georgia, when Tucker first laid eyes on him, Mel Tucker said, you know what, this guy, he's got a chance to be pretty good, and come springtime, he could be a first-round draft pick. Here is more of Tucker on Baker, who does let it be known that he'll play for Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, despite the fact that he has a very good chance to be a very high NFL draft pick.
The first day I saw him, we were in our offseason program, and I saw him doing some of the drills, and I pulled him over and I said, hey, you know, I think you can be a heck of a player here. You're 6 feet tall. You're the fastest guy out here. You got good change of direction. You got great length. And I say, I really believe that you can do something here. That's all you got to do is listen and pay attention. Do what I ask you to do. Do what we ask you to do. And that's what he did. And so, you know, that's it's a credit to him. You develop players along the way. Guys buy into our program. Now, whether he's a first-round pick or on it, you know, who knows? We don't know that. But the focus right now for him is to get better each and every day. Work on the details, technique and fundamentals. Doing the things that got you to this point and then taking it up a notch. That's what we want to do with him.
So listen, I mean, that right there, that clip gives you some context for how good the Georgia coaches thought DeAndre Baker was, how good he's proven to be in his final season at Georgia. That's a guy that I think has a very good chance of being a first-round draft pick and a cornerback. And I think Baker's decision to play in the Sugar Bowl against Texas, in a lot of ways, is a very unselfish decision. I don't mind telling you that it satisfies my selfish desires to a very high level, because I think when Baker, and to go back to what Tucker had said about him a little earlier, this is a quiet guy, but when he speaks, everybody listens. All of a sudden, here's this quiet, lead-by-example type guy who steps up in the immediate aftermath of losing to Alabama in the SEC championship game, of not making the college football playoff. I think there would be a temptation for a young Georgia team, one that has as many freshmen and sophomores as this Georgia team has. I think there would be a temptation to now look at this Sugar Bowl and say, oh, this is a consolation prize. And I think it would be a very legitimate temptation to say, you know, how much does this game really even mean? Is this a game that we ought to, you know, even be worried about focusing in on, worrying about trying our hardest for? Or should we either think about our own NFL status or our 2019 season that's hopefully going to end in a happier fashion than this 2018 season did, at least in terms of the SEC portion of that? I think it's only realistic that some Georgia players would be potentially considering that. But when DeAndre Baker says, hey, I got more at stake in this game than anybody does because I'm about to make millions and millions of dollars as a first-round pick, and I'm going to go out and show you how much the Sugar Bowl still matters to me. I want to go out and as a Georgia player on a winning note to put the bad taste of having lost to Alabama out of my mind and get that bad taste out of my mouth. I mean, if you're a Georgia fan, how could you not celebrate that idea from DeAndre Baker? I think it really speaks to his personal character. And as I said, there's a selfish benefit from all of us as well. On this program over the last couple of days, we have talked a lot about what some of the media has been saying about Georgia. There seems to be, even if not a full consensus, certainly a strong pocket of influential voices, both in the national and the regional SEC media, who clearly believe that Georgia is one of the best four teams. I mean, remember yesterday's program when we referenced the Paul Feinbaum show and ESPN's Kirk Herbstreit saying this? Here he is once again.
I felt for the last 5 or 6 weeks that this Georgia team, and I didn't go to Georgia. I'm not from the SEC. You know who I'm loyal to? College football. Not the Big Ten, not Ohio State, not Georgia. Mike, when it comes to my job, I'm loyal to just, and I have passion for college football. And I want to see the four best teams get their chance because that's what's right and that's what's fair. Now, it's subjective. Everybody's entitled to who they think is the best, but I'm not pushing for an agenda. I'm not pushing for Ohio State to make it as a fan. I'm pushing for what's right. And what's right is, how can you watch Georgia be number four and then go out and play the number one ranked team and not only hang around with them, but control them for much of the game until Jalen Hurts decides to write a Hollywood script and come back and knock off Georgia. And now we're supposed to say, Georgia, for that performance, you went from four, you're going backwards? To me, if anything, they should have gone up to number three, not backwards to number five.
And not to be outdone by that, Kirk Herbstreit, about as emphatic as you can be, saying Georgia should now be the number three team based on how it played against Alabama. Not to be outdone by that was Marcus Spears, who also on the Feinbaum show, the SEC network analyst, was emphatic that he was very impressed with what he saw from Georgia against Alabama. In fact, Spears is a pretty strong believer that Alabama is now pretty impressed by Georgia, too. Here's Marcus Spears once again.
Alabama is going to walk away from the SEC championship saying, we played the best team in the country. And I know how good Clemson is, but we saw what Bama was able to do last year, and it's different. Trevor Lawrence is there. They're making plays. But I'm telling, as a player, I wouldn't feel like it would be a harder game than the one I had just played in the SEC championship.
So you may be wondering, how do we get to Marcus Spears and Kirk Herbstreit after we were just talking about DeAndre Baker? Here is where my selfish desires as a person that follows Georgia closely and a person that roots for Georgia. I don't want Marcus Spears to end up being wrong. I don't want Kirk Herbstreit to end up being wrong. I want Georgia's Sugar Bowl performance to prove Spears and Jesse Palmer and Kirk Herbstreit and all these folks who've been touting Georgia as of late, I want the performance in the Sugar Bowl to prove these guys right. And DeAndre Baker saying, hey, you know what? Hand in the air. I'm playing in this game. I want to go out and show that Georgia is better than the team that let the lead slip away against Alabama in the final moments. I get really excited about that. I think this Sugar Bowl could be a cool thing for Georgia to set up guys like DeAndre Baker for momentum going into the NFL and the Georgia guys that will remain in 2019 for an incredible degree of momentum too, as Georgia does become one of the inside track favorites to win next year's national championship. But it may take a performance against Texas in the Sugar Bowl to put all of that in motion. I'm glad Baker's playing. I think it makes the game more fun, and I think it makes DeAndre Baker one of the true DGDs this program has seen in recent memory. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hello to you. Thank you for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Radio Noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever you find podcasts, including the world-famous DogNation.com, the Apple Podcast Player, or the Google Podcast Player there for the Android devices. We're just really glad you have found Dog Nation Daily. We will, as I said a moment ago, have a really cool guest today. The great former Georgia quarterback John Lastinger, who was a part of the SEC championships for Georgia and also a part of a tremendous Cotton Bowl game to end the 83 season. He'll look back on all of that. He'll also give us his thoughts on the current state of Georgia football. And, you know, John's a huge fan of what Georgia's doing right now. We'll do all that coming up in a couple of minutes. But, of course, super happy to have Marco's Pizza making all of this possible. And Marco's invites you to enjoy a tasty two-a-day with Marco's Pizza. You can get two medium, two topping pizzas for an everyday low price of just $6.99 each. You can say hello primo by ordering yours today from marcos.com. And as I said, it's great to have Marco's Pizza as a part of Dog Nation Daily. I heard some Mel Tucker audio off the top of our program. I shared some of that with you, and of course that's a perfect transition into the next piece of news that we need to get into on Dog Nation Daily today, and that is it did become official yesterday that Mel Tucker is now the head coach at Colorado. He will not coach Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. The Dogs will begin their preparation soon for that game against Texas, but also begin the process of replacing Tucker as defensive coordinator. And obviously in our program, the days ahead, we'll talk a lot about where this is going. I will tell you before we're done today that my opinion on maybe the replacement for Tucker, it may have evolved just a little bit. I'll explain that coming up a little bit later on, but when Jeff Sintel was with us on Tuesday here on Dog Nation Daily, I did think he set it in motion pretty well. Now, at the time, we only had the reports, but for the most part, there was no reason to refute those reports. It seemed likely that Tucker was leaving. It becomes official yesterday, but Jeff did a pretty good job of setting things in motion in terms of who that replacement for Mel Tucker might be. Let me let you hear a little bit of Jeff Sintel here, kind of putting the board together for how some of these replacements might go. Here is Jeff Sintel on possible Mel Tucker replacements.
The things Georgia wants is they want a great recruiter. They want a guy that has a lot of familiarity with the defense. I think it's going to be somebody under this Kirby Smart, Nick Saban coaching tree that would know the defense. That's why, obviously, a guy like Derek Ansley would be a great choice. He was a tremendous recruiter. I mean, when he was going head-to-head with folks, a lot of people thought that Derek Ansley would be a head coach in 4 or 5 years, the same way a lot of people feel about Glenn Schumann as well.
Yeah, so I think that those are two names that you've certainly expected to hear in terms of at least in how the message boards have reacted to this. Ansley's one of those names that pops up a lot because of his recruiting ties, his knowledge of this particular defense, and the fact that he's just kind of a bigger name given his stint here in the NFL. That's a name you expected to see. I wrote about Glenn Schumann as early as Saturday when this news first broke in terms of Tucker likely taking the Colorado job. I was already at the forum at forum.dognation.com making my case for why I thought that Glenn Schumann would be a good hire. So those are, kind of expected names. I also thought Jeff threw a bit of a wild card into the discussion of a name that I didn't necessarily think we'd be talking quite as much about, but this is also kind of an interesting candidate too. Here's more from Jeff Sintel.
The other name that's kind of popping a little bit that has some sense to it would be Kevin Shearer. He's now at Tennessee. He knows that defense well. That's a guy who recruits well, who has strong recruiting ties in Georgia. He's also a very shrewd coordinator as well, so...
Yeah, so I think that Kevin Shearer is not necessarily a name that I expected, but it is certainly an interesting name to consider because he does know this defense. He is a good recruiter. He kind of fits the mold of all these coaches. He obviously spent some time at Georgia, too, so that's a kind of an interesting name to consider. The overall bottom line for me on this particular discussion, though, and I thought that Jeff did a good job of echoing this when he spoke on Tuesday about all of this, is that ultimately this is still, for the most part, going to be Kirby Smart's defense. Now, coordinators matter because they obviously have huge impacts on recruiting. We'll have more on that later on. But in terms of the overall on-field defensive product, Kirby Smart still has a huge, heavy influence on this defense. For instance, Georgia's looking for a defensive coordinator at the same time that Alabama's looking for an offensive coordinator. In terms of the importance of the hire, Alabama making sure it has a good OC, because that's not Saban's specialty, is a lot more important than Georgia looking for a defensive coordinator. Tucker was a very good coach for Georgia. Chip Towers wrote that yesterday for DogNation.com. Everyone would agree with that. But the likelihood of the next defensive coordinator also having success is pretty high, just given Kirby Smart's expertise on that side of the ball. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily. And as I said, we are the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. We will have more later on the impact that Tucker's departure will have on UGA recruiting. Also, a couple other recruiting nuggets to get to before our program is done. But for now, let's move on. As promised, one of the great games in Georgia history and one of the guys that was at the center of it all. It's John Lastinger right here on Dog Nation Daily. And I will say hello to the great former Georgia quarterback and a guy that's good enough to be with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza today. It is John Lastinger. John, I have great memories of your career, especially the 84 Cotton Bowl, which we want to talk about a little bit right now. So thank you so much for being a part of Dog Nation Daily today. We really appreciate your time. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, it's good to have you here. Thanks so much for being here. And I guess let's start with the game that's on a lot of people's mind, just given the fact that Georgia will play Texas in the Sugar Bowl coming up on January 1st. What were your memories? And when you think back on what happened in the Cotton Bowl against Texas, kind of playing Texas in its own state, in a stadium that it knew very well, even at that time, a little bit unusual for Georgia to be, I guess, west of the Mississippi playing a game like that. But it was a huge win for you and your program. You know, what do you remember about that game? And when you celebrate that in your own mind, what comes to mind about it?
Well, you know, you're right. It was a great run, you know, for us back then, and we had gotten, you know, fairly comfortable going to the Sugar Bowl. We had been there in 80, 81, and 82. So, you know, the 1983 team, again, you know, we lost to Auburn, and, you know, obviously we didn't have a conference championship game, but it was our first conference loss in, I think, 4 years. But it enabled Auburn to lock in, you know, to go to the Sugar Bowl. And one of the things I remember, though, is that the week after losing to Auburn, Coach Dooley called the seniors in and basically, you know, said, here's where it stands right now. You know, if you guys want, we can go to the Fiesta Bowl and face Iowa, or we can go to the Cotton Bowl and play an undefeated Texas team, and we might well have, you know, something to say about who's going to be the national champion. Well, you know, it didn't take but a few seconds for all of us to say, yeah, let's go to Dallas and play in the Cotton Bowl against Texas. Of course, I don't think any of us had seen any film of Texas prior to making that decision, but that's kind of how it started, you know, for us. And you know, we knew they'd be a challenge. We knew we'd be an underdog, and it certainly was a battle. But, you know, we got to break it in, and we're able to pull out a victory.
So the win is a great cap to that 1983 season. And I actually want to talk more to you about that 83 season, because that's a pretty interesting season, not just for Georgia, but for all of college football. But, you know, the win caps off that season. And obviously, for a lot of people, they look at that as the first year of the post-Herschel Walker era. And listen, everybody's got great affection for Herschel Walker. John, I know you loved playing with him when you got a chance to do that. Everybody obviously would. But there's also this element of human nature of, you and your teammates want to prove that Georgia can also be good without Herschel Walker, too. He left after the 82 season. You guys moved on in 83 without him. I mean, how much was that a motivation and something that you guys talked about of, obviously you would have loved to have had Herschel had he stayed for senior season, but without Herschel, wanting to show that Georgia could also be good even beyond the Herschel Walker era?
Yeah, well, I think there was a lot of personal pride, you know, in that. And, you know, obviously Herschel was to this day, probably the greatest college running back. You know, I mean, given what you know, where I mean, the type offense and how many times we ran him, and just his ability to you know, to play as hard in the fourth quarter as he did in the first quarter. But you know, we felt like that we had other great players, and we did. I mean, you know, we had. I mean, you know, Freddie Gilbert, who played multiple years in the NFL, Guy McIntyre on the offensive line that played 12 years, won 3 Super Bowls. Clarence Kay played 5, 6, 7 years, you know, in the NFL. Terry Hogue played multiple, you know, almost 10 to 12 years in the NFL. Kevin Butler, you know, played 10 to 12 years in the NFL. So, you know, we felt like we had good players, and over time it was proven that we did. So, you know, yeah, we didn't, you know, it's almost scary to think how good we could have been with Herschel, but without him, we still felt like we were going to be a solid top five team in the country.
So let's start with the 83 season for a minute, because I think for a lot of our audience, they may not realize how controversial that year kind of was. Now, it's probably the Auburn fans who are barking the most about this. Auburn does beat Georgia in Athens. That game still comes on ESPN Classic from time to time. If anybody who's listening or watching right now gets a chance to watch that game, unfortunately, it's a Georgia loss, but it's a really good game and a great, you know, kind of embodiment of how good the SEC was even back in 1983. But Auburn does win that game. They go on to win the Sugar Bowl. But Auburn had also lost earlier in the year to Texas. So right. Miami beats Nebraska, and if I get these facts wrong, John, you can correct me, but Miami beats Nebraska and then jumps up to number one. So number one and number two lose on the final, you know, bowl day. Auburn thinks it should have moved up to number one. It does, that Miami wins the national championship. But, John, here's my question. So you guys beat Texas, which had beaten Auburn. Was there any debate whatsoever that maybe Georgia, who I guess would have had the one loss and the one tie to Clemson, was there any talk that Georgia having any kind of claim to a national championship at that time, or was it pretty much about Auburn or Miami in terms of you know, who should have gotten that vote?
Well, you know, I don't think we felt like, you know, we would be voted, you know, there's any way that we could jump all the way to number one. You know, I think what I remember, I mean, you're right, Auburn won the Sugar Bowl that night, I think, against Michigan, and if I'm not mistaken, had to kick a field goal with just a few, you know, in the last minute or so to win the ball game. So, you know, as far as I think what needed to happen from Auburn's perspective, they needed some style points. They needed to win that game big, and they didn't do it. And you know, the team that was accumulating a lot of style points was Miami. They had Bernie Kosar, quarterback. You know, Howard Snellenberger is their coach. A lot of pro style offense. I mean, they could really get it up and down the field pretty good. You know, I think Nebraska had a phenomenal team. Yeah. Turner Gill was their quarterback. Mike Rozier. I mean, they had plowed through everybody. You know, not highly unlike what Alabama has done this year. I mean, you know, they were that good, and you know, I mean, really came into that game. But you know, kind of got a bad draw having to go to the Orange Bowl and play in Miami, which was real. It was a home game for Miami, you know, and it's but, you know, I think, no, I don't think we felt like we had a legitimate shot at it. I mean, we were certainly happy to have, you know, a direct, you know, effect on who won by beating Texas. But, yeah. You know, I don't think really that I remember us saying, golly, we should be number one. But I'm sure the Auburn people were probably felt differently, but I just didn't think they won, you know, with if they had won convincingly, then they may have probably jumped to number one.
Let me go back in time even before the Cotton Bowl here for a moment. If I'm not mistaken, in 1981, you would have shared the Georgia roster with someone I believe is a good friend of yours. You're both from Valdosta, Buck Ballew. And then in 82, that's kind of your team, and you lead Georgia to the SEC championship. And obviously, you scored the touchdown in the Cotton Bowl of 84 to cap off the 83 season. But, you know what it's like to share a roster with another good quarterback. You see the same thing in Georgia right now with Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. What have you thought of the way that Fromm and Fields have coexisted with each other this year, and the way that Fromm is seemingly growing and Fields is looking for opportunities to get better, and obviously both guys like to be on the field. As a guy that knows what it's like to share a roster with other quarterbacks, what do you think of the way that Fromm and Fields have kind of existed together this season?
Well, I mean, you probably start with looking at each one individually. I mean, I think Jake Fromm is just, he just continues to impress me. I mean, the guy, he's so comfortable. It looks so comfortable to me throwing the football. And when I say that, he just seems to always know where he wants to go with the football. And if his first read's covered, he just does a nice job progressing down. If he ends up hitting the back out of the backfield, that kind of thing. So I just think that, he seems to show great rhythm and comfort in the pocket. And that's his strength. I mean, I think he's a game manager guy. I mean, he's more than just not make a mistake type thing. He gets things done. Now Justin Fields, golly, phenomenal physical talent. I mean, I don't think anybody can dispute that. But to me, in watching him a little bit this year, there were times when he, just like Jake Fromm in the pocket, where Jake may say, I don't like my first read, I'm going here or I'm going there. I think when Justin Fields didn't like the first read, he typically just kind of tucked it and tried to run, And so, I mean, maybe there's a little poise in the pocket that I think, he's going to continue to have to work on. He's a true freshman, I don't want to be too critical of that, but I think that's just an area that he's going to have to continue to work at. And I think I think Kirby and Coach Chaney and those guys, they understand that, and they're going to continue to work with Justin. So my hope, is just that Justin is at the University of Georgia because that's where he wants to be, and he wants to, that he understands that he's going to have to continue to work, and hopefully we'll stay there. It's just we're in an era now where that's not always the case.
Couple quick things before we let you go, John. First of all, you certainly appreciate your time. This is obviously a renewal of kind of a cool series with Texas, obviously two very proud programs that haven't seen each other much since your game there in 1984. I know you're probably glad to see Georgia back in the Sugar Bowl, a bowl in which Georgia's got great heritage, but are you also glad to see Georgia playing a team like Texas again? I know they've recently signed a home-and-home to play each other, too. It seems to me that the Georgia brand grows when you play these big out-of-region teams in the Sugar Bowl. In my mind, it's a pretty good step towards that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great matchup. I mean, just traditional programs. I mean, neither has been, on the cutting edge of success here in the last, 10 years or so. Obviously Texas, I think, won the national championship with Vince Young. But, yeah, just great programs. I mean, I think Tom Herman, that group is, they're pushing to get to the top. I mean, just like Georgia. I mean, Georgia may be a little ahead of Texas at this point, but I mean, I guarantee it should be a really good ball game. And I'm glad it's happening this year, because when I saw where we had the home and home coming up toward the end of 2028 or something, I started like counting on my hand, like, golly, I hope I can make it that far, I'm a little old,
Well, listen, I'm sure you'll still be in a great shape when that game is played. We're all looking forward to getting a chance to go out to Austin in the years to come, and I'm sure you're also looking to being in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl as well. It was announced that the broadcast team is going to be Sean McDonough and Todd Blackledge. Obviously, you've got a great history with Blackledge. You were the quarterbacks that matched up against each other in the 83 Sugar Bowl. I'm sure there's a chance you guys may share a little bit of a moment there. Obviously, that doesn't work out quite as well for Georgia. Penn State won that game, but obviously it's a big part of the history of the program. I imagine there may be a photo op or two between you and Blackledge before the week is done in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be there, and that would be awesome to see him. We've run into each other a couple of times back when he was with CBS and they were in Athens, and then I think I went to New York and Coach Dooley got inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, and we were up there and I ran into him and laughed. If you ever go back and look at those old highlights of that game, Penn State was in their all white uniforms, and Todd, took the field with some black high-top shoes. And, I remember looking across going, those might be the ugliest things I have ever seen. And so that was one of the things we were sitting there talking, and I said, hey, Todd. He goes, what? I said, you still got those ugly black high tops, and he fell out. I thought that's, I'm like, course, you know, I couldn't say much else because he, you know, I mean, they won the ball game. But let me tell you, Todd is a phenomenal at the job that he does, and he is a great person. He really is.
Well, John, you had a great career at Georgia, and it has been so much fun to reminisce about a lot of this kind of stuff and look ahead to this year's Sugar Bowl. We really appreciate your time here today on our Dog Nation Daily. Thanks for sharing it with us, and we'll look forward to speaking to you hopefully very soon.
Guys, I appreciate you remembering me and giving me a chance to be on. Thanks.
Excellent, John. Thanks so much. Really good stuff from John Lastinger there. And, you know, I've told this story a million times, and I apologize if it's now redundant, but, you know, my age, and I'll be 42 in February, I'm just not quite old enough to really have had, like, first-person perspective memories of the Herschel Walker era. I grew up hearing the stories. Hey, you should have been there and you should have seen it when, you know, Buck Belue to Lindsey Scott in 1980, or all the great things that Herschel did, the 82 Auburn game, the look at the sugar falling out of the sky game, and the great call from Larry Munson. You know, my dad, my grandfather had those cassette tapes of those Munson calls, would play them from time to time. And, you know, I would grow up and, you know, be really jealous of that, you know, wanting to experience those own kind of memories for myself. But the 83 Cotton Bowl, I can remember. Now I was as young as you can be, but I can remember that briefly. I remember that game. I remember the excitement around Dog Nation for, you know, when Georgia won that game. And I do kind of have that one on my mind going back into this bowl game against Texas this year. I do think that's a really proud part of the Georgia heritage. That, you know, in 84, the Cotton Bowl was still one of the biggest bowls. Now, it's kind of like circled back around to be big again now, but for a long time, it was kind of one of the more middle tier bowls. It was not middle tier in 84, and playing Texas, you know, and, you know, a southeastern team going into the Southwest to play Texas in what was essentially its own bowl game, that was a big deal. And Lastinger scores the game's only touchdown. You can find that on YouTube. It's very easy to find the Lastinger touchdown against Texas. It's all really good stuff. So for a lot of you who are younger, that might be kind of a cool, you know, memory lane to walk down, or part of Georgia history to you know, search for, just given the fact that it's about to be very relevant with Georgia playing Texas again. So great stuff with John Lastinger. Thank you all for indulging me with that chance to kind of go back and look at the great Georgia history, and we got more of our program coming up.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
One more thing about Lastinger being with us, by the way. How neat is the story to hear that the Georgia players were actually given a pretty significant say in the choice of which bowl they went to? I don't know how common that was then. I don't know if it's common now to say, we can go play Iowa in the Fiesta Bowl, or we can play a better Texas team in the Cotton Bowl. And to hear the Georgia players say, we'd rather play the better team, we'd rather have a say in who's going to win the national championship, knock Texas out of it. And, you know, when you look at the, you go back and sort of, you know, look at that, as I said, you know, Georgia would have been, I guess, 9-1-1 because they lost to Auburn, tied with Clemson. Clemson just a couple years removed from their own national championship. So Georgia, I guess, even though they were ranked fourth in the country or something like that, was not necessarily in that, you know, that national championship picture, but they were certainly a part of the round robin between Auburn and Texas, and probably cost the Longhorns a national championship. So it's kind of cool that the Georgia players got a say in which bowl to go to, and that they chose to go play the better team and ultimately get the win. That's still a big part of Georgia lore. With that said, let's do our SEC through. Let's talk about a few SEC stories that are kind of being kicked around right now. And this Auburn situation is a mess, y'all, and I continue to say this is a very precarious offseason. A lot of you have known. 24/7 Sports has reported this. Rivals.com has reported this from out of Auburn, that a lot of boosters are trying to make life tough on Gus Malzahn in the hopes that, I guess, he'll just quit. Well, Malzahn has kind of called their bluff on that. He doesn't want to leave the Auburn job. And he obviously, and on the heels of Chip Lindsey leaving to go take the offensive coordinator position to Kansas, Malzahn's looking for a replacement. Now, there have been a lot of assumptions that Malzahn would like to replace Lindsey with his good friend and terrific play caller, Hugh Freeze, who's obviously the embattled former Ole Miss coach. Well, a reporter connected to the Auburn program in a couple of interesting tweets yesterday that I think further cement what we've expected to go on here is that any kind of hire that might make Malzahn more secure in the Auburn job, there's a pocket of Auburn boosters that just simply don't want it to happen. Let me show you here a tweet from Josh Moon, I believe his name is. So here's what he writes. He says, the situation at Auburn now, top donors and university officials are so unhappy with the head football coach that they're seeking to undercut him by limiting assistance contracts to single-year deals. This is currently preventing Auburn from hiring Hugh Freeze, offensive coordinator. Josh Moon goes on to say via Twitter that Freeze is reportedly seeking a multi-year deal from future employers. Sources said Malzahn has asked Auburn to waive the recent restriction on multi-year contracts in order to hire Freeze. Auburn's response is no. So here is Auburn, who could hire the most coveted offensive coordinator on the market, and yet boosters apparently don't want that to happen. If you believe this report, boosters don't want that to happen because they don't want Gus Malzahn to be happy and secure in the job at Auburn. What a mess that is there on the plains. We have seen a scenario over the last couple of years where a couple of Georgia's biggest rivals have really fallen on hard times. Tennessee is still in the midst of a mess. Florida might still be in the midst of a mess. More on that in a moment. I'm not so sure that Auburn is not about to rejoin these Georgia rivals who've had some struggles as of late. I think this is a dangerous offseason for Auburn. We'll have more on this story as it develops. Barry Odom, the Missouri coach, gets a raise and an extension yesterday. And the only reason why I mention this, the Missouri coach, is I was telling Connor Raleigh this off the air yesterday. When you give opinions for a living, some of them are going to be wrong. Others are going to be really wrong. And I guess when it comes to Barry Odom in Missouri, this is one in which I'm just going to have to take the L. I was very critical of Odom and Missouri before the season began. Thought they'd be among the worst teams in the SEC. Thought the Derek Dooley offensive coordinator hire was probably a joke. The truth is, in all regards, Missouri has actually ended up being a pretty good team. And when you look ahead to the 2019 schedule for Georgia, it will be a home game. But on the list of relatively dangerous games for Georgia, I think to a certain extent Missouri's got to be there. Now, it's still not a team I think is capable of beating UGA. But in terms of SEC teams who've kind of are on the rise in comparison to some others, I mean, clearly Missouri's got more positive momentum than a lot of programs do. So credit to Barry Odom. I would say that the raise is well-deserved for him because by the end of this year, Missouri's actually a pretty good team. All right, one of the things I should have talked about yesterday and didn't is that Mike Locksley, the now former Alabama offensive coordinator, does win the Broyles Award as the nation's top assistant. I think this is more of a reputation deal than anything else. They scored a lot of points, so Locksley gets the award, but it's probably deserving nonetheless. He gets that award, but the real award for him is the fact that he now takes the Maryland head coaching job. So Loxley's moving on. Alabama will be looking for an offensive coordinator. My guess is they'll probably just promote Dan Enos, the quarterback's coach. Otherwise, Enos is going to have a lot of other job opportunities he could potentially take. But Alabama, at least for now, in the same situation as Georgia, looking to replace a high-profile coordinator. Then one more thing for our SEC throw I want to get to, and this is recruiting-related. Then after that, we're going to talk some UGA recruiting on our own program here. But Barton Simmons is a guy that I know and respect from 24/7 Sports. He kind of covers recruiting from the national angle, and he was talking about some programs at CBSSports.com that still have some work to do in recruiting, and one of the programs that he mentions is Florida. Now, y'all know my backstory here. I'm the sort of number one Gatorator. I'll never deny that. I take great pleasure in Florida's misfortune, but that doesn't mean that just because I'm biased in favor of seeing it, that when there is misfortune to discuss, doesn't mean it's any less accurate. And Barton Simmons paints kind of a dire picture for Florida. Let me read to you from Simmons. You know, he's at 24/7 Sports. This post appeared at CBSSports.com. What Simmons says is there is one, this is how bad things are for Florida recruiting. There's one Florida commit out of the state's top 20 prospects so far that's committed to the program. After that, the next highest rated player from Florida committed to the Gators is the 38th ranked player in the state. Barton Simmons goes on to say that early in his tenure, Dan Mullen is leaning on a national and regional footprint for Gators recruiting, but that's not going to fully maximize the potential until they're dominating in the state again. Listen to Barton Simmons' final sentence here. We may have to wait the next cycle for that shift. There are a lot of Florida fans who want you to believe that because Florida's in the whatever bowl they're in playing Michigan. Is it Fiesta Bowl? Is that where they are? Fiesta Bowl again. They're in the Peach Bowl against Michigan, and this is some great year for Florida, and based on wins and losses, it may very well be, but it's recruiting that matters. And as of right now, Dan Mullen's not doing any better in recruiting than Jim McElwain did. if this doesn't change, and Florida's going to host some major recruits coming up. Kalen Thibodeau is coming back, for instance, for a visit. They're going to have a chance to impress some people, but some of the guys they're going to have on campus are going to be long shots. I want to say that there's some reports out there that Trey Sanders is also expected to give his last visit to Florida. That may end up being true, may not be. Florida's going to have a chance to impress on some visits, but if it doesn't, and this is barely a top 20 class for Dan Mullen after Jim McElwain left this roster in shambles, that's a bigger story than whatever bowl that Florida went into in 2018. We'll make that your SEC through. And speaking of recruiting, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marcos Pizza, let me turn our attention on this program back to that with a couple pieces of information. Now, the more significant of these pieces of information is going to come next, but let me start with five-star linebacker N'Kobe Dean, because yesterday on Before the Edge, presented by Kroger, Jeff Sintel was discussing some issues with a lot of the UGA recruits. That's a show you got to make sure you watch this time of year, because it's big time in terms of keeping you updated on recruiting. Jeff gave us an update on Dean. Now, this is not an update on where he's going to go, but when that decision is going to be made. Here is Jeff giving us a slight update on the five-star linebacker N'Kobe Dean's timeline. Take a listen.
So one of the things about N'Kobe Dean I find interesting is he'd always wanted to commit on December the 13th, which was his birthday. And he decided to back that up to December 19th. He's got his own event there at Horn Lakes High School. State championship, by the way, home of a new Class 6A Mississippi State champion. I've been told that Dean still plans to make his decision on the 13th. And the world's just going to find out on the 19th.
So that's the situation on the N'Kobe Dean timeline. The world will find out, as Jeff says, on December 19th. And boy, this is one of those that when you put your ear to the ground and you really try to look at what the online chatter has been as of late, good luck making sense of anything. I've heard Alabama. I've heard no, it's still Georgia. I've heard Ole Miss. I mean, I've just heard everything in between. And obviously, I'm just like many of you are, trying to grab on every morsel of rumor that's out there. When it comes to N'Kobe Dean, that becomes a very difficult thing to do. Either Dean is changing rapidly, or the the sources are saying different things. It seems like there's a lot of info out there about N'Kobe Dean that doesn't always seem to line up together quite perfectly, but that's obviously a huge, open target on the board for Georgia. Georgia's got to get better at stopping the run. I think N'Kobe Dean gives Georgia a big chance to do that. Now, the more important news, I think, in terms of what I wanted to pull from yesterday's Before the Hedge involves a guy we've talked about a lot on today's show, the now departed Georgia defensive coordinator Mel Tucker. He's on his way to Colorado, and his absence at Georgia might be costing the Dogs, at least right now, with another top target on the board. Here's more of Jeff Sintel on that.
I think Mel Tucker was big for Kyir Elam, especially because he had that NFL experience. His father played 8-9 seasons in the NFL. I think this is going to work good for Georgia in terms of Kyir Elam's not going to make his decision until February. He's going to not even take his officials until January. I think that's good because Georgia will need to have that guy in place certainly well in advance.
So let me speak as a fan on this for a moment. We may get more into this throughout the rest of the week here on Dog Nation Daily. My initial thought on the replacement for Mel Tucker was Georgia's good enough defensively. Just promote a guy from within. Just give the job to Glenn Schumann. But when you look at how important defensive back recruiting is for Georgia in this 2019 class, I think if you've got to make a hire like Derek Ansley to get a guy like Kyir Elam, an elite, big-time, good-looking defensive back prospect, all of a sudden now my fan desire may shift more towards an outside name like Ansley than an inside name like Schumann. I think Schumann would be a great hire, but Georgia's got to get elite defensive backs for 2019 class. Luckily, Elam won't announce until February. That's good news. It gives you time to build that momentum with him. But bringing in a guy that can make Elam feel comfortable at Georgia, or Tyreek Stevenson feel comfortable at Georgia, those are important issues for this program to address. All right, we will wrap up here on our program, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marcos Pizza. It's great to have you with us. And I have to admit, and I wish I wasn't this petty. I wish I was not this childish. I wish I was more mature. But giving you some bad news involving Florida recruiting makes me feel really good. Makes our buddy Eddie here on set feel really good, too. And on a day, in a week, where Georgia could use some good news, bad stuff for Florida may be about as good as we can get right now. That's okay. I'll take it. I'll also remind you, 768 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Dogs. It's our Gator Hater Updater right here on our Dog Nation Daily. Let me also say one more thing before we're done. And I shouldn't worry about this. This doesn't matter. This couldn't be less significant. But SI.com had its ranking of off-season coaching hires in terms of the biggest splash, best fit, best hire. Do you know they ranked Jim McElwain at Central Michigan ahead of Mel Tucker at Colorado. What are they thinking? We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.